Yes, it is Monday, April 8th. This is the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. A very good morning to you if you are just tuning in. We are here at the Riverside Stables, Inglis, in southwestern Sydney at Warwick Farm. And today, Winx's filly goes through the ring, lot 391 by Piero. And, well, the big question, how much? Looking forward to the theatre here today at the Inglis Easter Yearling Sale. Off the back of a great day one of the championships on Saturday, we got somehow racing and even had an upgrade. Well, you said we ended up on a heavy eight, didn't we?
Heavy eight, I think, yeah, by the end of the day, Mido.
Okay. Unbelievable, considering the predicament we were in on Friday with all that rain and a great day's racing we had, of course, in the end. Last night in the NRL, Canberra 41 over Parramatta 8 at GIO Stadium, and the Cowboys yesterday afternoon, too strong for the Titans in the end, 35-22. The AFL's gather round ended yesterday in South Australia. Collingwood held on to beat Hawthorn by 5 points. St Kilda beat Richmond by 7 points. GWS top of the AFL ladder on percentage after their 28-point win over the Gold Coast Suns. There were plenty of close matches. In fact, Carlton beat Freo by 10 points. Geelong beat the Western Bulldogs by 4. The Swans didn't quite get the margin they got last year against West Coast when they beat them by 171. They accounted for them by 26 points. And Brisbane, the Lions, got their first win of the season, beating North Melbourne by 70. How are you, Buzz?
Yeah, very well, thank you, Mido. Another weekend of high drama, though, particularly for the South Sydney Rabbitohs, eh?
How does this all play out in the wake of their 34-4 loss to the Warriors on Saturday? And, well, not only Latrell Mitchell, the coach, everyone's under pressure, to say the least.
Yeah, they're not just the coach, you're 100% right. I think when South walked out of a Core Stadium the other night, I think the landscape has changed significantly. I think the chairman, the CEO and the board have had enough. They've resolutely stood by their coach, Jason Demetrio, through, you know, some pretty tough circumstances, you know, over the last 12 months. But I think that patience has run out. And as I reported yesterday afternoon with Bulldog on the Telegraph website, his days are numbered. We're saying that, you know, he's got this Cronulla game. You know, if they can get up, it might delay, you know, the proceedings and a move on the coach. But look, I think it's done. They will have an internal review now. And I just want people to understand, when we've only had 5 weeks of the season, and to judge a coach on 5 weeks, I think, is particularly unfair. But what the Rabbitohs are doing, they're going back to when they were leading the competition midway through last year, which was 20 games ago, and they've lost 15 of those matches. And with the roster they have at the Rabbitohs, with Latrell, with Jack White and with Cody, Damien Cork, Cullum Matangi, they've had some injury problems. They're just not aiming up. And as I said on the weekend Big Sports Breakfast yesterday, while you can blame the players, it is the head coach's responsibility at every NRL club to ensure his football players turn up and are presented on game day ready to go. And Jason Demetrio has not been able to achieve that with his football team. Don't know what you guys think. Is it too harsh? But look, I think his time's up. I really do.
My question was this, Buzz. Does one win save him, or is the decision being made? And I think you've indicated that the decision has been made to move on, because I only have to look back last year where Adam O'Brien was in a similar situation. And all the talk was he was gone. He was gone. And then they were able to go on this magnificent run. So what happens if he wins this week, then they have the bye? Is he surviving, or do you think it'll come?
Have you seen the two games he's got after the bye, Laurie?
One's Melbourne, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got Melbourne and Penrith after the bye. And look, it's almost identical situation to Adam O'Brien. And Adam O'Brien was gone last year. But with Latrell and his ill discipline, he cannot get the best. He cannot get this side to turn up. They've won 5 games of their last 20. So we're not sacking him on their lack of performance this year. Look at that premiership ladder, mate. They're down the bottom. South Sydney. This isn't the Bulldogs, West Tigers, Titans. This is South Sydney. They started the year as $11 third favourites. They're out to $34. Whatever happens, the landscape at South has changed. People who have been supporting Luttrell and Cody and other high-profile players through thick and thin over a long period of time, I spoke to on the weekend, are no longer being soft or suggesting back off, or, you know, which they have done a lot in recent years.
The obvious question from me then, if you're going to get rid of the coach, who is the replacement? And there's two that stand out. Now one is Sam Burgess, but he left in those circumstances last year and probably not ready for an NRL first grade position just yet. And the other one is Wayne Bennett. And Wayne has coached at South Sydney before. He's off contract at the end of the year. He wants to continue coaching. Is he someone that South Sydney would go back to?
I have no doubt whatsoever that Blake Solly, the South Sydney chief executive, will contact Wayne Bennett or the people around him just to sound out, you know, what are his thoughts? Would he be prepared to move back to Sydney? Because Blake Solly has got to do his due diligence now. Wayne Bennett won't be the only one he'll contact. You know, Craig Bellamy's not locked in Melbourne as a coach beyond this year. Sam Burgess, I spoke to Sam in England 2 weeks ago, and I spoke to the chief executive of Warrington. He's doing a great job there, but he says Sam won't be released to come back to the club. I think they will look at absolutely every option over the next couple of weeks. They've got the bye after the Cronulla game. And Wayne Bennett, Sam Burgess combination sounds very, very appealing to me. But, you know, and outside of the coaching, we really probably haven't spoken enough about Luttrell and his ill discipline. And I wrote an item in the column last Monday, about his ill discipline, about the Adokar tackle. And it was a dangerous tackle. It knocked the player out. The week before, it was James Tedesco. He dropped his knees onto Tedesco in the in-goal area at Allianz Stadium against the Roosters. And then he comes out with this just shocking forearm, elbow, whatever you want, to Sean Johnson. Could have broken his jaw. So where is Luttrell's career at the moment is a really, really big story. The amount he's missed 15 games through the judiciary since he's been at the South Sydney Rabbitohs. An absolute superstar of the game on his day. But I don't know where his career goes from here. I just don't know. I think, is he playing with lack of interest?
He's playing with frustration at the moment. Things that he did on the weekend. It's just not acceptable. They're dumb things to do. And for me, when I see a player of his class do that, you're going, that's frustration written all over your face.
Does Wayne Bennett change that if Wayne Bennett comes back?
I think he's got a great relationship with him. I think, Luttrell has responded to Wayne in the past. Mm. And Wayne's got a great track record with all types of players. And there's not many players that Wayne doesn't get the best out of.
Yeah, and Luttrell's got to take a little bit of self-ownership here as well. He's a very experienced NRL player now. He's done and won everything in rugby league. Origin, and he won a title at the Roosters. But it gets to some stage where he does not require the babysitting or the cuddles from, you know. He's got to do this himself. The important thing is now that the people I spoke to over the weekend who have been cuddling him and protecting him and almost, you know, I've been abused by people at the Rabbitohs for some of the stuff I've written about him, that they're no longer, they've run out of patience. So Luttrell's out there on his own with a decision to make. The next 3 weeks, while he is suspended, is going to be particularly important that he cannot go home to his farm on Taree, which he normally does. As Michael Ennis, I heard him say in Fox Sports, he's got to be first to training, last to leave. He's got to show there is a commitment that he can grow up. Hopefully, this is a wake-up call and a defining moment in his career.
Buzz, one team that's hit a bit of a speed hump, albeit not as bad as South Sydney, has been Parramatta the last 2 weeks. Without Mitchell Moses, there was a really poor performance against Canberra last night. Where are you seeing the Eels at the moment?
Oh, mate, they're in all sorts. And look, I had a look at their draw too, Pengers, before I came on. And mate, they've got an ugly draw. They've got the Cowboys. They've got the Dolphins, who are leading the comp. Then they've got Manly. Then they've got the Broncos. And then they've got Melbourne Storm. That is a really, really tough draw without their champion playmaker. And the halves they're using at the moment, Dylan Brown, it's just not working. I thought he was poor last night. Mind you, they were beaten 41-8 and there were others there. Again, God, it's a tough game, rugby league. Brad Arthur's been there 10 years and there will be conversations now. Look, he missed the top eight last year, and I know we've only had 5 rounds. But as I've explained to you with that draw, they're in a lot of trouble. They're not entitled to get beaten in the manner in which they were in the national capital last night. And there was huge pressure on Brad and the team now. You know, they've got no halves depth. They had to move Brown to where they're playing him now. And look, I think, I don't know what you think, Laurie, is Clint Gutherson an option now to move to 5'8 with Brown and move the young kid, Blaze, to Lager out of there? I don't know.
It might be something they'll have to have a look at. But from what I've seen in the opening couple of games without Mitch Moses, I think they've got to do something in the halves. And they're going to do something very, very quickly.
Are we too heavy, Laurie, on the coaches?
Well, I think we are. Yeah. But again, it's one of those ones where things change quite quickly in the NRL, and we've noticed it more and more in recent times. If you lose 3 or 4 in a row, then all of a sudden you're under the pump because people expect results. And
at the top,
I think,
clubs, they do, mate. At the top, yeah. at Power and South, they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think we are harsh, but that's only me.
Yeah, I think we are too. But yeah. Look, the bottom line is there is not a more demanding membership fan base than the Parramatta Eels. It's been so long since they won a comp. And when they're getting knocked off 41-8 by a side, and you look at those two rosters at the start of the season, right? If you were a coach, who would you rather be coaching, Parramatta or Canberra? Parramatta, on paper, have a clearly superior roster to the Raiders. But Ricky got them up last night, recovered from a couple of poor weeks. And, you know,
you could say that too, Buzz. You could say that about the Roosters.
Yeah. the best roster.
Like the Roosters, their roster is better than most. I had the Roosters playing a grand final. They've won the same amount of games as
Power.
The Eels, yeah.
No, you're 100% right. 100% right.
You know, what did you make of the bunker over the weekend, Buzz? Because I'm still shaking my head.
Do you really have to bring that up?
No, I didn't want to, but I was, and again, I was in an establishment on Saturday, and I looked up and I saw a drop ball, a knock on from a Manly player. I thought, the bunker will override this, and I was
stunned.
The
Manly players didn't even chase. They waited back there for the knock on. All the Manly, you have a look how much backup the centre had. But you know who made that decision? Grant Atkins. You know Grant Atkins is the number one video reviewer? He does Origin and Grand Finals all the time.
What about the
Victor Radley sin bin? That was a bunker decision. Todd Smith. I'm going to name all these guys so I go through them. Todd Smith. How on earth was that a sin bin, Victor Radley? What was he supposed to do? It was nothing like a hip drop tackle. Terrible decision. And there's no excuse when they've got all those screens and all that technology, all those replays. There's no excuse. And tell me this, how was Latrell left on the field for a forearm to the head of an opponent? grade two dangerous contact. Ashley Klein on this occasion. Why wasn't the referee told, get him off, 10 minutes at least?
Well, yeah, I totally agree with you there, mate. I couldn't believe he stayed on the field. I couldn't, like, if that, and I know we say it all the time about decisions, grand finals, but if that Manly one was at a grand final, you'd be howling the joint down.
I'm happy with Dom Young getting sent off. I think they got that one right. But why wasn't Jerome Luai for an identical tackle, as Bulldog's written about in his column today in the early, was it round one? You know, it's not, shouldn't be that hard up there. You know, we blow up all the time about obstructions and the Hargreaves-Edwards collision, but these ones are so simple to us on our couches at home. You know, and they've got better facilities than we have. Anyway, move on. What are we talking?
James Tedesco. Gee, it was a nasty concussion, wasn't it, when he came to contact with Viliami Kikau on Friday night?
Yeah, 10th bad concussion of his career, mate, and of obvious concern. I saw Peter Fitzsimons in the Herald, I think, was a little bit over the top, calling on him to retire. Look, I went to Nathan Gibbs on Saturday, probably Australia's most experienced sports medico, and look, Nathan Gibbs said there's no magic number. You know, if you have 8 concussions, you know, do you tie 10, 12? There is no number. And he's been overseas, Europe, America, to conferences where the world-leading experts talk on these sort of issues. He says it's all up to individual players, their recovery. Tedesco told the media on Saturday that he woke up, he feels fine. Such a brave bugger, this guy. I still can't, you know, remember the Sivo tackle up at Combank Stadium? Mm. And Kikau was just slaughtering that the Roosters on that right edge the other day, and he just puts his head in areas where footballers not as brave as him won't do it, you know. And
geez, look, he went in at a million miles an hour too, Teddy. Like,
oh, Teddy's a freak with courage, mate. Absolute freak. And look, what concerns me and all other viewers on TV is that he's just become a father first time. He's, you know, he's a young dad, and no one, but look, the Roosters are very, very good professional on concussion, as you saw with Boyd Cordner and Jake Friend when their careers were terminated early, and I'm sure they won't let Teddy play again if there's any risk whatsoever.
Buzz, this is going to be a big story this week. Michael Jennings was activated as the 18th man in that Roosters loss to the Bulldogs, which was game 299 in his NRL career. He's due to play, you'd imagine, game 300 this week in Newcastle on Thursday night, just given all the injuries and concussions to the Roosters' backline. What do you think the NRL should do, given his recent history, not only with the drug suspension, but the civil case that involved his ex-wife that was settled in the court a couple of years ago?
Well, yeah, look, I'm really worked up about this one, and I've written an open letter to Andrew Abdo today urging him not to go to Newcastle, to present the 300-game ball to Michael Jennings, as he does with other footballers who reach that milestone. Has nothing to do with the drug suspension. He did his time, did the crime, served his time, and he's on that basis, he's back in the NRL. However, there is a massive, massive integrity issue here around a civil court case in 2021 where he was found guilty of sexually assaulting his ex-wife, Kira Wilden, not once, but 4 times. He appealed, which is his right, but lost. A second court held up the decision. Jennings was ordered to pay his ex-partner, who had to give up work. She was so shattered by, you know, what had happened. He was ordered to pay his ex-wife $500,000 in damages. He has not paid back 1 cent of that money. And this is a disgraceful look for all women in rugby league if Andrew Abdo travels up the highway and presents the game ball to him under these circumstances. I'm different with people like Curtis Scott. People will say, oh, what about Curtis Scott? Curtis Scott, for his domestic violence, was given a 12-month community correction order, which he served. So he's done his time. Michael Jennings has not done what the court told him to do. I've read all the court evidence. It is quite horrific, and I feel really, really sick about the NRL being in Newcastle to honour his 300th game. It's just personal opinion, but that's the way I feel.
Buzz, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much. Enjoy
the week.
Thanks,
guys. Cheers now. Bye.
Heroes and villains, give us a call, 1353 53. Now, just some of these scores. So the Valero Texas Open going down to the wire because Denny McCarthy is flying in his final round. He's shot 7-under so far through 16 holes. He's one shot behind Akshay Bhatia, who Evan Priest tipped us on the show last Thursday. So they're 19-under and 18-under, respectively. Rory McIlroy's next, 11-under and in the clubhouse. Best of the Aussies at this tournament. Adam Scott currently tied for 14th, closed with a 2-under 70, 5-under for the tournament. And in the LIV tournament in Miami, Dean Burmester, one shot clear of Louis Oosthuizen and Sergio Garcia. Of course, the Masters starts Thursday night. Now, in the Premier League overnight, Manchester United and Liverpool, it finished 2-2 at Old Trafford this morning. Sheffield United and Chelsea also finished 2-2, and Tottenham are up to fourth after a 3-1 win against Nottingham Forest. And, well, their rivals in the battle for fourth over the weekend drew with Brentford. That's Aston Villa, 3-3, their match against Brentford. We'll speak to Mossy a little later this morning, but the table, we are set for some finish in the Premier League season with Arsenal back on top on goal difference on 71 points. Their goal difference is 9 goals superior to Liverpool, who are also on 71 points after that draw. Manchester City, 70 points in third. So Tottenham and Aston Villa are both on 60 points, though Tottenham have played a game less and have a slightly superior goal difference by 3 goals over Villa. In the A-League yesterday, Newcastle beat City FC 3-1, and Adelaide went to Perth and beat Perth Glory 4-2. And we'll speak to Berkey a little bit later this morning as well in Super Rugby Pacific over the weekend. It was a big win for the Brumbies over the Waratahs, 40-16. And poor Angus Bell, looks like he's out for the season again. Suffered a foot injury which kept him out last year, and it looks like he's suffered an injury to the same foot. So it's a huge blow for Angus Bell personally and the Waratahs as well. And the other matches over the course of the weekend, we saw the Melbourne Rebels beat the Fijian draw 41-20. And the Auckland Blues 50-3 over the Western Force at Eden Park. The Formula One, the Japanese Grand Prix yesterday. Max Verstappen won the Japanese GP for the third straight year. Sergio Perez and Carlos Sainz filled the podium. Aussie Oscar Piastri, he was eighth in his McLaren, while Daniel Ricciardo crashed out on the opening lap after he made contact with Alex Albon. So he's still to get any points this year as he... Well, he's fighting for his future in Formula One, isn't he, really, Daniel Ricciardo? Okay, some more texts here, and Craig the Truckie not happy about the Dally M points. Mate, the Dally M points, what a joke. Dylan Brown got 1 point last night. How? They got absolutely smashed. It's embarrassing. He's got a good point, I think, here, Craig the Truckie.
The other one I'd like to make mention of, and I'm not saying he's had a bad start to the year, all right, because he's been good. But you know the leader on the Dally M medal board is?
I've just looked at the points, and he's leading convincingly at this point, Loz.
Kalyn Ponga.
He's up by 5 points.
So he's basically leading by one game. How many games have they won?
They've won 2 games, Loz. Scraped home against Melbourne, who were missing most of their stars.
Mm.
And they beat the Dragons on Friday night, and the Dragons were pretty poor.
So in the opening 5 weeks of the competition, has he been our best player?
I would argue probably not.
No.
Not yet.
But, do you not think the Dally M skews to these teams that are not that good, that might be finishing on the fringe of the top eight, who have a star player? It's happened the last few years. It does. You know, look at the guys who have won the award. Kalyn Ponga won it last year with that phenomenal run in the last 10 games, but over the course of the season, given how many games he missed throughout... for a concussion, I thought Sean Johnson was the best player throughout the regular season last year. The year before that, was it Nico Hines?
Yep.
Jack Whiten's won it previously. We're not talking about teams who are traditional top four teams every year, are we?
But what they would argue there is that what happens with those good sides, they tend to take points
of course.
Off each other.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's hard.
Yeah.
Because you're splitting it most weeks. Whereas the player in that team that is there or thereabouts, they might, in a loss, pick up a point.
Yes.
But yet when they win,
they get six.
They get, yeah, they get
the maximum.
The maximum.
Mm. Okay, we've got Robert on the line. G'day, Robert. How are you?
Good morning, Jared. How are you?
Very well, thanks, mate. Have you got a hero and villain for us?
Yes, I have. Now, my hero is Michael Wood and his staff, Michael Wood, the track manager, and all his staff at Randwick. And he has done all those renovations over the years, and he's got the track on Saturday to what it was at 20 past 12 when they had that first race. Now, when you saw the jockeys coming back, being interviewed on Sky, their silks were clean. Mm. There was no mud on them or anything. And their faces, they took their goggles off, there was no problem. There was no mud, no nothing. Now, he upgraded that from a 10 to a 9 to an 8. Now, he has to be, over the years, 5,000 tonnes of sand. He is a hero. And my villain,
well said.
And all the knockers that said it wouldn't race.
So which was, I think, the vast majority of us. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think waking up on Saturday morning, many of us really thought we were going to be
racing.
Well,
I woke up at about 6 and it was raining.
Did you see the social media video that Peter Moody and Michael Friedman put out? I saw those videos, Robin. I thought there's no chance they're going to be racing today. I bet you Michael Friedman's happy they ended up racing in the end.
It's a group one.
No, I didn't think they were going to race either. But when they said they weren't going to have a proper inspection or give anything over until probably an hour later, I thought, hello, he must know something.
Yeah, it's a great performance from Michael Wood and his staff.
Massive. So, that's got to be the best track in the whole world to take 230 mils of rain and at 6:30 all that water and race 6 hours later on, well, it wasn't even a heavy 10, it was a heavy 9. And then it went down to a heavy 8. Come on, it's got to be the best.
And like you said, it was the lack of kickback, wasn't it, that I think surprised
us. What were the times like on
Saturday? I had a quick look, Loz. They weren't.
It didn't seem to me like it was racing on a heavy.
Well, put it this way. Last race of the day, they ran 1:11.24 in the PJ Bell over 1,200 metres. That's not a heavy, heavy track.
No.
That's like probably a softish track more than anything. So, remarkable job by everyone concerned.
Good on you, Robert. Appreciate you're in the running for the $100 gift card. I think we're giving out a Brisbane prize pack still as well for the top nomination for heroes and villains. We've got Steve. G'day, Steve. How are you?
Morning, fellas. I'm well, thanks. hero is myself for finding Chain of Lightning 2 weeks since the last two starts, picking it up at $14 a fortnight ago and then $31 boosted for the TJ. An all-around stunning training performance from Peter Moody. I mean, he's got a hell of a lot of good horses on his hands at the moment, and Autumn Angel was also unlucky just carrying that heavy weight, or else I think we would have seen another winner for Moods.
Yeah, and of course, I Wish I Win ran third, didn't it, first up?
Well, I think Peter Moody had a good TJ. Yeah. Peter Moody was more surprised than anyone that Chain of Lightning won. He said he was watching I Wish I Win the whole way
down
the street.
I'll tell you what I don't like. When you go to the pub on a Saturday, so we get a long table, and someone has to have their back to the big screen. There's other screens up, but they're not showing the races. The races are on the main screen. Yes. All the other sports are on the other one. And you're watching the races, and you're cheering, horse loses. And then the bloke with his back turned to the races goes, well, what won that? And you go, oh, Chain of Lightning. No. And he goes, pulls his ticket out and goes, oh, I backed that.
Didn't even watch it.
Me at the golf club on Saturday, boys. There's a few golf buddies that are off me like a bad smell. So, and the villain has to be our very own Dean Bullfrog Ritchie for his article insinuating that the Latrell booing is down to racism, when evidently on the weekend he showed that it's his on-field and off-field actions that are really turning people off him, including South fans. And I can't see how he changes that unless he obviously just spends some time hard reflecting on his actions, because he realistically should have gone to the bin for the elbow on Sean Johnson, and now he's facing 3 weeks, whereas Victor Radley got sin bins and he got cleared by the match review committee. There's a lot of inconsistencies there.
Yeah, no, you make a point there, Steve. Appreciate the call. We discussed last week about quite a lot about, you know, why Latrell gets booed, and this certainly didn't help his cause. So this incident on Saturday against the Warriors, no doubt about that. Thanks for the call, though. We got Andrew. G'day, Andrew.
G'day, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, mate. What have you got for us?
That's good. Well, you can't go past the Newcastle Knights fans Friday night, I should say, up there in that rain. That's my, they're my heroes. I mean, I watched it in front of the telly, but geez, it was good. And the villain, well, you know, everyone's been talking about him this morning, but Latrell Mitchell, mate, just for his on-field behaviour and everything else that's happening in his world.
It's the, you know, most common nomination this morning for the villain, no doubt about that, is Latrell. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see how South handle Latrell in the next 3 weeks, in particular now that he's suspended. Someone texted earlier as well that it's only 2 weeks. No, it is three matches.
No, three
he's suspended
weeks.
By match because they got the bye.
No, but I think it's actually three games.
Yes, three games. Yes. On the charge sheet it says three. It says the matches, not the weeks.
Yes, it says matches. Yeah. So he'll be missing the Sharks, and then the Storm and Penrith, like three massive games for the Rabbitohs against tough opposition.
Well, massive games for the club, but also massive games for the coach.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The ramifications are huge. But talking to Buzz this morning, he seems to think it might
the cards
might already,
almost marked, yeah. Well, if they come out and win this week, Loz, and win convincingly, you'd think they'd buy him a little bit more time, you would have thought. But it's hard to see them doing that in the current form.
Yeah, but you just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't know. Young bloke gets an opportunity. I've seen it happen in the past.
One thing we haven't touched on so far this morning, gents, is that horrible injury to Lachlan Ilias in the New South Wales Cup.
What did he get charged Saturday with?
No, it hasn't come out yet, I think, because it's done by the New South Wales Rugby League.
Right.
It'll be done a little bit later today. But
yep.
The circumstances of that being in the last, what was it, 30 or 40 seconds of the game. And that
season gone?
Well, they say it's a broken leg. I don't know if it'll be complete season gone, but he'll have to obviously, you imagine, get some surgery.
What an epic blow.
Oh, terrible. Terrible for the young man who's trying his best to reestablish himself. And I suppose we've been talking about the interpretation of pressure on the kickers for a long time, saying, it's too soft, they're wearing dinner suits and whatever else. But when you see something like that, you can understand why the game's gone down the path it has.
And the other thing about it too, Adam, is that a lot of people were heaping the blame on Lachlan Ilias when South weren't going great. Going, Lachlan Ilias is the problem.
Problems are far, far deeper and greater than one player.
That hasn't been the problem.
No.
You know? So, and you feel sorry for a young boy like that, you know, playing as a number seven, high-profile team, not going great, and you're the one that is the scapegoat.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Lachlan was playing great football either.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't.
But I think that stemmed from a lot of them not playing good football.
Mm.
And if you're prepared to drop a young guy that's making his way in the NRL, I think you had to make some more tough decisions as well.
Okay, heroes and villains for today. Hero was the track at Randwick Saturday. Villain was the mindset we had on Friday night in the city in our cricket end-of-season trip, drinking like the races were off and waking up having to go. So it was like a typical weekend during the cricket season. Cheers, the duck from the Wine Country Cricket Club. What else have we got here? Jason Collett for his ride on our boy Hopeful on the weekend. And only just pipped on the line. Villain Latrell for all the reasons said this morning. Phil from Coffs. Losses, surely Zach Lomax has to be a chance for a wing spot in Origin this year. Who else is there for New South Wales on the wing? P.S. Middo, Liverpool just lost the title. Come on, United, says Shire Az. It's going to be a contentious spot, though.
Brian Tottle will definitely get one.
And the other spot is right up for grabs.
Who have we got?
Josh Adokar.
Yep.
I don't know if Daniel Tupou is going to make himself available for selection or if he's playing good enough anyway. I'm not sure about that.
Swali'i, no, at this stage.
No, I don't think he's probably in good enough form at the moment.
No. Geez, off the top of my head, I'm just trying to think of wingers. He'd have to be in the conversation.
I think he's definitely in the conversation at the moment, the way he's playing.
Yeah. Ali Mosley, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Middo, guys. How was your weekend?
You're very good. And, well, it was bright and sunny by the end of it, or even at the start of it, when we got to 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock Saturday morning, which was extraordinary. We'll get to that in a second, though. Want to get your tip. What is the filly, the Winx filly by Piero? What are you thinking? How much does she go for today?
Oh, man. If you go off what old mate from America has been saying, he'll pay anything. If you guys, I'm sure you've had chats about this already. This individual who says he's not going home without her, except if he gets run up, in which case he'll stop, I think was what his tweet said. Did you guys read that one out? Which was quite not amusing, but it's all playing out today. I would have thought somewhere in the vicinity of five, but it just depends who wants her. I mean, if you want to go home with her and you've got the money to spend, I dare say she'll just keep going up. And I wouldn't be surprised if there'd be a few syndicates getting together. I'd say even, you know, the Capitas family and probably Coolmore and maybe even a few of the other guys that they have in a lot of their cult syndicates might put their heads together to buy her back. So it'll be interesting, but it could be anything. But realistically, you'd think she'd be worth more like five.
Yeah, it's a big price, isn't it? But I think it'd be great theatre out here later this afternoon. And what time did you say, Middo? About 1 o'clock?
In between one and two, roughly.
Yeah, one and two?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can only imagine what it'd be like in that ring this afternoon when people are putting their hand up and bidding and see if it's a two-horse race or whether someone out of the blue just puts their hand up and gets her. But whoever gets her, that'll be a massive story. I'll tell you what was a massive story on the weekend, Al. The fact that we raced. Now, hand on heart, what were you thinking on Saturday morning after the rain we received on Friday night and then again early Saturday morning?
I suppose on Friday you start making calls to anyone you can, anyone you think might know something more than you know. So you call everybody saying, what are you hearing? What are the thoughts? And the chat around that was they'd got the track to a position where no matter how much rain they had, provided there was no surface water, they would try and race on Saturday. So I think even waking up Saturday morning to the deluge of rain we had, I had an interview at the stables with Nick Ryan at 6 a.m. on Saturday morning, and even we were texting and he said, I don't think it's going to be worth it. I haven't even worked my horse yet. I don't know if it's going to go ahead. And we were down there, as everyone else was. All the stable staff came out and we were all up on top of the hill watching, looking down at these poor guys walking the track. And essentially, the whole of the track was fine except for this one section where the storage water dam, which was virtually empty the day before, had filled up and I think was spilling over a little bit. So that was the only query. The rest of the track was fine. So everyone was watching and waiting, and you could see in the distance in the morning at about 7 a.m. the cloud was breaking and you could see the sun behind it. And I thought, if we get sun now and they can deal with this section of the track, I think we'll be on. I'm sure everyone said it this morning, it's a credit to the whole team at the ATC. Mike Wood has done a phenomenal job. He knows the track better than all of us, all of the armchair experts on Twitter who said it should be off and all these other things, and he knew what he was doing all the way through, albeit I'm sure it would have been a pretty nervous wait for him in the morning, and it's just a credit to them. I thought it was the most wonderful day.
Ali, we've been chatting about the Doncaster a little bit earlier this morning. There was so much talk about Tyler Schiller having to get down to 49 kilos to ride Celestial Legend, but I watched the overhead of the replay of the Doncaster. His ride was absolutely nerveless. Like, the kahunas he showed to push through that gap was phenomenal. What do you think of his performance, well, I suppose, of Celestial Legend, but also his ride in the Doncaster?
Both fantastic. I think Celestial Legend was always earmarked as a horse that had that talent and was always going to be something. Whether you thought one day he'd win a Doncaster, I guess, is another story, particularly at his age. And I think he is a horse who is exciting because of the whole connection with Les and what he's done with him and the fact that Les is, you know, 85 and all these things that play into it. But it all comes back as well to the fact that he is a fantastically talented animal. And Tyler, at 49, having probably not eaten in 2 days, to steer him like he did is the most wonderful job, and all credit to him. Tyler's a really great young guy. He's humble. He He works hard. He's the future of our sport, and he deserves to be there as well. And I think that's what he showed on Saturday too.
What was your performance of the day? Maybe taking away from the Doncaster, out of all the fantastic racing we saw, what run stood out for you?
Oh, I mean, it's probably got to be Riff Rocket, I think. And if you go back and watch the ride, James McDonald's ride on Riff Rocket was second to none. I thought I was on Chaowulf, obviously, so I was bemoaning the fact that he rode him so well. But I think the better horse won at the end of the day as well. I think we definitely got J-Mac there. I think he had pulled out an absolute peach on Riff Rocket. He was lay of the day, which I guess made it a little bit more exciting as well. And James was really up and about after it. So that was pretty exciting for me. But there were so many exciting stories in there. Even a filly like Manal, really solidifying the fact that the fillies have been the biggest takeaway from this two-year-old season, having now won the Bourjean and the Golden Slipper and the sires. It shows that, we're all paying all these exorbitant amounts for colts and the fillies are coming out, albeit still paying a lot of money for these fillies. The fillies are coming out on top. Manal was one who stepped out at the very first two-year-old trial. So to watch her step out then and see her progress in that time and the way she's just furnished into a racehorse, she's a beautiful natured filly. Michael Fredman's done a wonderful job with her. And that really showed on the weekend. So many exciting stories. But I think that would probably be another element that I thought was great on the weekend, that the fillies really solidified themselves as I guess, better than the colts this season.
Yeah, and Peter Moody, well, he won the TJ Smith Stakes, but probably with not the horse we're all expecting.
That's right. Chain of Lightning was a bit of a surprise one there. I think maybe Moody was the only one who wasn't surprised when she came out and won. Take nothing away from I Wish I Win, though. I think he certainly was unlucky. I think he was just getting to the end of his run and he'll take that natural improvement from it second up. I thought he was as forward as they could have him, but he was fantastic, as was Bella. I think Espiona would be another one to follow out of that. She was desperately unlucky in the TJ. She said,
what is
well
it with her
pace.
Head?
Oh, I won't even say what. We've got a funny nickname for her, but she races with her head on. It's almost like she's not comfortable the Sydney way of going, but it's all there, so it's so frustrating.
Most definitely. The engine's there.
She only got clear very late, and she dashed the last bit. She ran the best last 600 and 200 of the entire meeting. She just doesn't help herself, does she? And no doubt very frustrating for connections because she's got stacks of ability. I think she'll be hard to beat in the all-age should she head there. And I'm still hearing rumours that she might be on a plane to Royal Ascot this year as well.
Okay. Well, we roll on to day two. Gee, Via Sistina, $2.10. for the Queen Elizabeth on Saturday, all in as it stands.
She might already be the best horse in the country, Middo. Yeah. We might get that confirmed on the weekend.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Ali.
Can't wait, guys.